the Social Work Bubble podcast. I'm your host, Laura. I'm a licensed master social worker here in New York. And today we have another podcast episode with just me. You might have seen on my Instagram story that I am looking for some more podcast guests. I've kind of hit a lull. I had such an influx right before I went on maternity leave, and then after. And now it's kind of like, okay, needing some more people on. So if you're interested, I'll try to remember to put a link below, but I have a Google form that you can fill out if you're wanting to be a guest. So that would be really cool. Today we are diving into all things CBT, cognitive behavior therapy. I feel like CBT sometimes gets a bad rep. Which I get, because I do think there are some therapists that are using CBT for things that CBT should not be used for, like oppression, racism, you know, and they don't really understand how to use this framework in a helpful way, and instead it can feel very, like, gaslighty and minimizing and not at all helpful. So I get the criticism. I'm here to hopefully talk about CBT in a very helpful, fun, fresh, cool way. At my work, I work at Lincoln Square Psychotherapy. So in the description of all my podcasts, you can see the website lsp.nyc. I work fully remotely now because I moved to Central New York, but all my clients are still based out of the New York City area. I did a staff training on CBT, so today's podcast will be inspired by that. And at its core, CBT was founded by, oh gosh, I can't remember their first name, someone Beck. And I got a lot of this information from the Beck Institute. And one of my favorite books to reference is Cognitive Behavior Therapy by Judith Beck, like volume 2, something like that. I'll have these things linked below, but that's one of my favorite resources to use to give myself a refresher on CBT. So yeah, I practice as a therapist. Like I said, I am a clinician. I primarily use psychodynamic therapy, cognitive behavior therapy, and dialectical behavior therapy. I have a pretty eclectic approach, and I do pull from other modalities and other theories. Lately, I've also really been loving internal family systems, but these are the ones, psychodynamic, CBT, and DBT are ones I really pull from the most. Like I said, I've done this CBT training at my work for my colleagues, so this is inspired by it. It is by no means an extensive training, so please use the resources I have linked below. You can get certified as a CBT therapist. I do not have that certification. I have been looking into it because I do think it would be cool to actually, like, have that official and to go through something like that. I did take a course at college, I think. So anyways, that is that. Before we really dive into the meat of it, feel free to like, share, follow the podcast wherever you're listening. We also have bonus episodes, so if you are on the Buzzsprout, like, hosting website listening, you can subscribe for however much you want a month to get access to bonus episodes that I do. They're very similar to the solo episodes I do recently. So I hope that, you know, if you want to do that, that's fun, that's fresh, that helps me create more content for the Social Work Bubble. But if not, I'm glad that you are here listening right now. Now let's get into it. So what is cognitive behavior therapy? So CBT is based on a few core principles. So I'll kind of, like, lightly touch on some of these principles, but it's basically this idea that psychological problems, which, the phrasing of that is not great, are very much influenced by unhelpful thinking, by unhelpful behavior, that when we have distress, we are able to learn how to cope with it and how to live a quality life. We can be based, is very much present focused. CBT is very much present focused, which is also why I like to pair it with psychodynamic therapy, is because as much as I think unlearning certain ways of thinking and behaving is important, I also think it's important to understand how the heck we got to that point in the first place, what things really influence that. Being able to heal the past as well can be really helpful. So that's great. CBT is more almost like task goal oriented, problem focused. I think with most therapies, there is a very There's a huge component of the therapeutic relationship, getting feedback and collaborating, which is honestly one of my favorite parts. And that's something I've really taken into all other parts of therapy. In CBT, there tends to be a lot of homework. I will say this, and how I, because I have a more eclectic approach, I do pull a lot from CBT, and I do a lot of like the reframing work and like mapping thoughts and feelings and behaviors and all that fun stuff. There are some people that do CBT very structured because at its core, if you are doing hardcore CBT, it is short term and it is structured. Like it's like 12 weeks and structured. So you're doing these worksheets, you're doing these homeworks, you're figuring out how you're thinking and how it's related, all this, and you're changing it. The therapy I do is typically more long term, and that's why I have this more eclectic approach, is we're pulling from CBT, we are changing thinking patterns and behavior patterns, we are learning to cope with our feelings and in these distressful moments. But there's also, to me, therapy is also more complex. So, yes, at its core, raw CBT is very short and structured. But it doesn't have to be. Another key part to that is psychoeducation is a huge, huge part of that, which I also love psychoeducation. And there's a lot of emphasis on empowerment, self-efficacy, like clients really having power in the situation, which again also just ties back to the therapeutic relationship. There has been research after research after research after research that shows mental health treatment honestly does not matter. This is a big generalization. It does not matter if you do not have a good therapeutic relationship. And maybe that's me twisting it. I think at its core, it's the biggest predictor of positive outcomes in clients is having a positive therapeutic relationship. And that might not mean it's like positive all the time, right? But there is a powerful rapport that's there. There's trust, there's openness, there's honesty, there's compassion, there's deep empathy for humans, and human dignity and valuing the person sitting across from you. And that's what really is valuable. CBT is not going to do anything if your client doesn't respect you or want to listen to you or care. Now, CBT is one of those things where I think we all, I see a lot of life coaches using it, honestly. Like, oh, changing your thoughts, your money mindset, stuff like that, which valid. Don't give me on it. I'm gonna avoid the life coach tangent. CBT can be really helpful for anxiety, depression, panic attacks, substance use disorders, eating disorders, anger, a whole bunch of stuff. Any type of thing where you notice there are unhelpful thoughts really kind of running you into a really difficult cycle. So let's talk about CBT. What is CBT? I think we might all be familiar with what we call the cognitive triangle, the coolest triangle around, where we have thoughts, feelings, and behaviors at each of these points of the triangle. And basically, it is, what is the word for this? A symbiotic relationship? I don't know if that's the correct language. But for example, if I have an unhelpful thought of, oh, I'm going to embarrass myself when I do this speech, I will feel anxious and then I will call out sick. And basically, that reinforces that there was something to be anxious about and that that thought that I had was true. And so it ends up reinforcing itself. Now, thoughts can influence behavior and feelings. Feelings can influence behavior and thoughts. Behaviors can influence what we think and how we feel. So, like, it's not just this one direction loop. Behaviors, feelings, and thoughts are very much intertwined in this process, and that cycle can start anywhere. Now, if we kind of blow up big picture, we have thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. Behind our thoughts, we have automatic thoughts. So those are the thoughts that we think like, oh, I'm going to embarrass myself if I do this, you know. Then we have intermediate beliefs. Those are kind of the rules and assumptions that we live by. Like, if I don't do this perfectly, I will fail. And then behind that are these bigger over kind of umbrella core beliefs of I'm a failure, I'm unlovable, I am undeserving, everybody hates me. Like those bigger core beliefs. Like that. So that's kind of the cognitive model at its core. So we have those umbrella core beliefs, those intermediate beliefs, which are those rules and assumptions, and then those automatic thoughts. In a given situation, those automatic thoughts are triggered, then we have a feeling about it, a certain reaction, and then we behave in a certain way. There could even be like a physiological response that occurs. So that's the cognitive model. Now, what is CBT? Like, how do we actually use this therapy? So the first part of it is the cognitive intervention. So those are the interventions that we use to change our thinking. A big part of that is improving our awareness of what we're even thinking and feeling and how we're behaving. A lot of that can be done through journaling, by keeping thought records. So a lot of the times when you see someone that practices CBT, they'll have their clients fill out a log of, oh, like this week, this was a situation, this triggered a thought, this triggered this feeling, this triggered this behavior. How I can cope in the future is insert this coping skill, or how I did cope was this way, either unhelpful or helpful coping skill. With cognitive interventions, we can also identify cognitive distortions. There is a whole long, lengthy list of cognitive distortions. They include things like black and white thinking and catastrophizing and all or nothing thinking, more and more and more. Understanding that, I think, can be really helpful for clients to start to identify and call out thoughts that are unhelpful. Because if we can label them as a cognitive distortion, we automatically don't have to trust that thought. Versus just being like, oh, I don't believe this thought. It's not based in anything. That's harder for us to take seriously. Versus almost having this proof of like, this is literally psychologically and scientifically a cognitive distortion, a thinking error. I therefore do not have to trust this because I know this is just a black and white thought. I know that this is just an all or nothing thought or an overgeneralization. Through that, we can do things like cognitive restructuring or cognitive reframing. That is where we ask ourselves these questions of, does this thought have any truth? Am I taking a little tiny semblance of truth and making it bigger or smaller than what it actually is? Is this thought valid in any kind of way? Where we really kind of are evaluating the validity of the thought. Is the source that it came from valid? Is there any truth to it actually? And usually when it comes to unhelpful thoughts, there isn't, you know, or it was very much based in a past experience and not the present moment. And CBT is all about we are here and now based in the present. We can also do things like behavior experiments. That's where I love doing this with clients, where similar to exposure therapy, we can almost put ourselves in a situation where we know like, oh, I am going to put myself in a situation where I have to make a mistake, you know, so, and we're going to kind of test out to see what happens. So we're gonna, maybe we are doing a public speech and we are going to stumble over a word on purpose. And we're gonna kind of gauge what happens. And usually in doing that, we start to notice, oh, this is fine. Everything is actually okay. Along with cognitive restructuring and reframing, I do like to think of it as like putting thoughts on trial. So we're also saying, asking ourselves a lot of questions and trying to interrogate these thoughts. Like, am I assuming, interpreting, guessing, or projecting? What are the facts? What is the truth here? Is there substantial evidence for or against the thought? Am I attempting to interpret this situation without all of the evidence? Am I giving this too much weight? If I wasn't feeling anxious or depressed, would I view this situation in the same way? So things like that that are really helpful. The behavior experiments. We can also use affirmations and emphasizing the positive, which I always want to be cautious with because I do believe in toxic positivity. I believe in that it's bad. And so I always want to be careful with emphasizing the positive too much because I often find with my clients it's more helpful to just like lean into the neutral thoughts and kind of be like, it doesn't, we don't have to put a positive spin on it, but we don't have to put a negative spin on it either. Another big part of CBT is exposure therapy. So I love exposure therapy. I really love it. I feel like I've just, I feel like it just has really great results if done correctly, So at its core, if you've ever seen like the anxiety ladder, there's kind of this drawing of a ladder, and you collaborate with your client to basically say, okay, the bottom rung of the ladder is the thing that you can think of that gives you some anxiety, but like the lowest level of anxiety. So that could just be thinking about something. And then the very top rung of the ladder is the thing that you would rate as giving you the most anxiety ever. And basically through exposure therapies, you work your way up that ladder, so you rate all these different things. You kind of use that SUDS scale, which is basically like your, just like your feelings rating really. And all of that. The other piece to like changing our thoughts is also just like some acceptance. I love radical acceptance in DBT, and I think that's where it can be really powerful in CBT, is kind of being like, thoughts are going to exist. We don't have to take them as truth. They just because they exist, it doesn't mean that they're valid. And so sometimes that's also kind of that neutral lean in is, wow. I had a thought there for a second. I had a thought that I was just gonna totally flop at this thing. What a wild thought to have. We're not gonna do anything with that. We're just like, we're almost just like brushing it aside. We're also just accepting, yeah, our brain is gonna do some funky things. We're also gonna be in situations that trigger certain emotions, and that's okay. We don't, it doesn't have to be again, like so all or nothing. Like we either feel everything or we feel nothing. It can just be like, oh, okay, I'm feeling a little nervous about this. We'll do our best, and that's it. So those are more like the cognitive components. Again, like you can keep a thought record. There's a lot of good material out there. I will plug my Etsy shop because I do have a whole cognitive behavior therapy workbook for adults and for kids. I especially love the kids one that I made. I'm working on potentially like revamping the adult one, but it goes through like some different, like the thought, feeling, behavior, pattern, the thought record, how you can reframe certain things. So I'll give some examples. Because honestly, even as a clinician who's been practicing for a few years now, sometimes it is hard to think on the spot, okay, how can we reframe this? But it is a skill. It's a learned skill, and it is, does get easier with time. So, for example, we could have a thought of, oh, what did I do wrong? Is she mad at me? She must not like me. And instead, the alternative thought that we can replace that or reframe that with is, she must have a lot on her mind today. She didn't even notice me. Stuff like that. Where again, it's very neutral. And it's just like, we're just reframing the situation. We're giving ourselves a different perspective on the situation. So that way, if we remember the cognitive triangle, if we change our thoughts, then it will change our feelings and then we will behave differently. So if we're able to change our thought to something more neutral or more positive, we're gonna feel very different. It will probably cause a lot less anxiety, it'll probably cause a lot less panic, and we'll be able to kind of just release something and walk away, which we love. The second piece to this is the behavior piece. So something I like to keep in mind is we can change our thoughts and we can change our behaviors. Feelings are going to exist. I do think we use coping skills for feelings. We do all of that, but feelings are valid. But the thoughts and behaviors attached to those feelings are not always valid. If we are feeling anxious, anxiety is allowed to exist. Anxiety is a normal feeling to ex well, normal within reason. Like, it's a feeling that we experience. But how we behave or what we think as it relates to that anxiety is something that maybe we can change. Because if we're thinking something that's just like not helpful for us, like, oh yeah, everyone hates me, that's really not serving us in any way. It's really just doing harm. That's where we want to create change. In terms of the behavior, a lot of this can also, exposure therapy is also very much like a behavior intervention, just as much as it is a thought intervention. But other behavior interventions in CBT can be trying to reduce avoidance to different things. You want to schedule in activities that are actually enjoyable, that you like. You want to be realistic and kind of deconstruct the thoughts and feelings about performing a task. You could even rate activities based on reward or payoff. So I use this a lot. I use this strategy a lot with clients that have depression and it's affecting just their daily life skills, like doing the dishes, hygiene, stuff like that, where I think part of behavior activation is knowing there's a spectrum of what something can look like. So if the goal is to shower, we have showering being we're washing and we're shampooing and conditioning, we're scrubbing our body, we're shaving, we're doing all of this. And then we have showering where we are splashing our face with cold water. And that's it, and there's a spectrum in between that where maybe we're going into the shower and we're just sitting on the bathtub floor and letting the water come over our body and that's it. Maybe it's just a shower where we're only shampooing and then we're getting out, or stuff like that where we're kind of seeing, we're making it as easy as possible for us to complete the task. And if we're noticing we're having some like avoidance or resistance or just a hard time doing it, that's okay. We're also showing up with empathy and compassion with ourselves, and we're being like, it's okay. Let's try it a different way. Let's do it in a way where it's still manageable, where it feels doable, but we're also still showing up for ourselves. So that's something I really, really like to do. Part of the behavior interventions, and this is an important part, before you do exposure therapy, is you always want to make sure your client is equipped with coping skills and stress reduction techniques first. You never just want to jump into exposure therapy without having any coping skills because you will set yourself up for a panic attack. Do not do that. So really do a lot of work in psychoeducation around like calming the nervous system, feeling grounded. There's a million and one different coping skills and everyone is different. I do think it's important, and this is something I didn't used to do, is like I would talk about coping skills, but I wouldn't actually practice them with clients, and that's still something I'm trying to change because that was like a bad habit. And I'm like, what am I doing? We're talking about deep breathing. Let's practice deep breathing together. It's also important, I've noticed, to tell clients that they should explore these coping skills and find out things that work for them when they're not feeling bad, because we're not all of a sudden going to feel like super, super anxious or super, super depressed and start using these coping skills that we've never tried before. Like, that's just not going to happen. The internal barriers are up a million miles high. Like, why would we just start deep breathing or going for a run if we've never even thought about it before, you know? So I will say, like, try to fill that toolbox with tools on days when you're feeling good to kind of explore, wow, okay, I really love this. Or, you know what? I realized when I did this, it didn't really make sense for my lifestyle or my schedule. And that's how we're able to learn, where I think in moments when we're feeling low and then we're confronted with some of these things, it just can feel really devastating. So these are some basics that I'll throw out there, but like the 5-4-3-2-1 grounding technique, like five things you see, four things you can hear, three things you can feel, so on and so forth. Any kind of breathing. I have a whole book about breathing techniques. There's a million out there. Visualization, like leaves on a stream. So you're kind of setting the scene. You close your eyes, imagine a setting, and there's this beautiful flowing stream. And these leaves are floating down the stream. And each leaf is a thought. It's an anxious thought. And we're just watching it float down the stream. And we're watching it float away. Mindful walking, mindful exercise, mindful eating. One of my favorites, laying on the floor in silence. I used to do this all the time as a teenager, and now I do it now because it brings me so much comfort. Is when I'm feeling so stressed, I will lay on the floor because it's literally grounding, literally. I will shut off the lights and I will just stare into the abyss, and it's lovely and exactly what I need. Other coping skills, a music playlist. You can make a music playlist that you know will kind of bring up certain emotional responses. For example, I do think we always want to be cautious about digging ourselves even further into a pit of despair. We don't want to do that. But sometimes, but we also need to feel the feelings. You know, I've had moments when I've had like depressive episodes where it's like, no, I want to listen to some depressing music and just sink in it. And I think that's fair. But also at some point, it becomes unhelpful and it makes my situation worse. And so I came up with this strategy. I've never heard of anyone doing this, but I was like, it would be really great if you could almost just make a playlist for yourself, like on Spotify or something, where you start off. This is your depression playlist, okay? You start off with some really depressing music. You are in your feelings and all of that. And as the playlist goes on, the music changes to be a little lighter, a little bit more upbeat. So that way, the music is also like guiding you through this feelings process, you know, where you're allowing yourself to be in the feelings, but by the end of the playlist, we're kind of releasing it a little bit. We're moving forward. I'm also a huge, huge fan of movement, free movement, shaking it out, dancing, karate chops, just like moving your body in any kind of weird way that you want is so, so freeing. Cocooning in a blanket, expressing yourself through arts. Something that I work with my clients a lot on is using hobbies, you know, as a means of coping, which is huge. I love creative arts. I love creative expression. And I've noticed for a lot of people that I work with, like, they just don't have hobbies. They don't have anything that brings them joy. They don't have anything. And I think I'm also just a hobby collector. You know, I love a hobby. I love everything. So if I see something, I'm like, oh, I want to do that. I want to do that. Let's try that. So I get that, like, that's not everyone's jam, but doing something that you can just like really express yourself with can be huge, especially in these moments. So again, part of CBT, part of that behavior intervention is the coping skills and being able to do something different with our behavior, you know, where, okay, maybe instead of avoiding this situation, I'm gonna go anyways. And maybe our thought didn't change, our feeling didn't change, but our behavior changed. We went to this event even though we were anxious and we said that we would be so embarrassed and people would hate us if we went. And by going anyways and not avoiding it, we are proving to ourselves that that thought does not have any standing and it's not valid and it does not have to control us. And that is where we take our power back. And I love that. Other ways that we can help clients change behavior is through role playing, actually in session, whether that's communicating differently, setting boundaries, even just talking through something. That role play can be really huge. Helping them problem solve, because let's be real, sometimes there are just like very real practical barriers to doing something. So problem solving can be huge. Goal setting in a way that makes sense. We always talk about those SMART goals. We love a SMART goal. And I do think something that is also kind of in the realm of behavior activation in some ways, it reminds me of it, is harm reduction. Harm reduction is a form of a behavior intervention that I love and that I'm obsessed with. Part of that is really at its core, knowing that this person is probably still going to engage in this behavior. How can we make it safer? How can we make it in a way where, okay, we know that maybe they're still gonna, I guess this is like the best example I can give right now off the top of my head, is if I have a client that I know is actively using heroin, harm reduction at its core is, okay, they're still gonna use heroin. Let's make sure that they get clean needles. You know, that's why needle exchanges exist. So something like that. That's an extreme example. Harm reduction can be anything. You know, it can just be reducing frequency. It can be substituting something out. So, okay, I know that when I'm really, really depressed, I like to maybe binge. Awesome. Maybe I will eat a tub of ice cream, and then afterwards I'll have a fruit cup, and if I'm still wanting something else, something sugar, like, we can do that. That's fine. So again, it's just looking at this way of, like, no judgment, only empathy, only compassion, and we're being realistic. Why would, like, going cold turkey on something with any kind of behavior, substances or non-substances, is tough and not realistic and not sustainable. So which is why I love harm reduction, and I bring it into so much of my work with my clients, even when it's not substance use related. I'm just like, how can we just do that? Like, there's a spectrum of possibilities of what this can look like. Is there a way that it could be safer or more helpful for you, even if it's in a very small degree? And that's huge. So again, at its core, we have thoughts, feelings, and behavior. We change our thoughts by cognitive reframing, cognitive restructuring, being aware of this process in the first place. So much of this beginning work with the client in CBT is them just monitoring, bringing into awareness, what was I even thinking in this situation? What did that bring up for me? What was I feeling? How did I act? How did I cope with that? You know, and then as kind of sessions go on and treatment progresses, they're able to substitute maybe some of those unhelpful thoughts for more helpful thoughts, some of those unhelpful behaviors with more helpful coping skills, or different strategies that we've talked about. So this was a very simplified version of CBT. I really hope it was helpful for you. I love CBT. Again, I want to make sure that I make this known. You cannot reframe oppression. You cannot reframe racism. You cannot reframe systematic issues. I do think CBT also really thrives when you understand systemic issues, and also because it's just, that's where it can become harmful. Because honestly, there are many therapists that are doing far more harm than good by trying to, like, reframe situations where there's no business reframing it. Because let's also keep in mind, I think CBT can really lean into that toxic positivity sometimes, where it's just like, sometimes you can't reframe something. Sometimes something sucks, and it is going to suck. And maybe that's where we can lean more into DBT and do some distress tolerance and know that we do have the ability to withstand and tolerate hardship and difficulty, and we don't have to reframe it. You know, that's not something where it's a flaw on our own for having an unhelpful thought. We are just existing in a very difficult circumstance, you know. So always keep that in mind. CBT has context. So you always, always want to be mindful of, like, asking yourself with any modality, does this actually make sense for this person in this situation? Is this something that would be helpful for them to reframe? Is reframing in this context a little victim blaming, a little something that maybe we don't want to do right now? So always bring in that awareness, always challenge yourself. I think people get so territorial and defensive over the modalities that they use, and it's kind of like, chill out, calm down, calm down. You know, like, just evaluate, assess, have some awareness of your own. And that's that on that, on cognitive behavior therapy. Like I said earlier, I do have some CBT workbooks in my Etsy shop that'll be linked below, so you can check those out. I did, this is a related announcement, on my Etsy shop, I have recently and forever reduced everything to $5 and below. Just because I'm just like, you know, social workers are struggling out here, and I want to make good resources really just for fun, really just for fun, just to help you all out. I guess I want to be compensated a little bit for my time, but it's also like, I just want it to be helpful, and I make things that I find helpful. So that's that. Everything on my Etsy shop is hopefully affordable and something that is also just quality. I've been revamping things. I've been going through things, taking things out that I just feel like were trash, you know, and trying to do things that are actually quality and good and helpful and resourceful. So that's that. If you enjoyed today's episode about CBT, feel free to like, follow, share, leave a comment, DM me on Instagram. Do any of that. And if you're interested in being a guest on the podcast, please, reach out. You can DM me on my link tree. If you go on my Instagram, like in my link, in my bio, you can fill out the Google form if you want to be a podcast guest. You can also just DM me on Instagram, but I would prefer the form just to keep it a little bit more organized. Last time I did not have a Google form, and I was just trying to keep track of everything in my Instagram DMs, and it was absolute chaos. So I've learned from my mistake. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and we will see you next time.